Welcome to the Hollywood Outsider, an award-winning weekly entertainment podcast. In this episode, we're going to tackle this as one real topic. Is streaming worse than cable ever was? Let's talk about it. Let's get on with the show. My name is Aaron Peterson. Joining me today, my fellow host, Troy Heinrichs.
Hey, everybody.
Amanda Sink.
Hello, hello.
And remember, you can find all the information on the podcast and reviews and whatnot at thehollywoodoutsider.com, including Good Luck, Have Fun, Don't Die, one movie that I definitely recommend for everybody. How's it going, Amanda? You haven't been here in a little bit. How you been?
Real busy, but I'm so happy to be here and talk about, well, I'm sorry, let me rephrase as Troy was preparing himself for the fight and the debate of this episode, because you know it's always a competition with Mr. Heinrichs.
The battle. Yeah, Troy, you got a vest on or something, like a bulletproof vest just in case?
I don't know. I'm just here for the whole, like, you know, when you talk about the fact that box office totals don't mean anything, and the whole inflation. We've had these conversations.
No, I'm not talking about theaters at all. I'm not talking about theaters at all.
That's why I'm curious on what your stance is going to be on this, you know, broadcast versus streaming versus cable versus I'm interested in your point of view.
Really? I don't think you've ever let me finish the thought to get my point of view. I think you're usually just waiting to throw out your point of view. Is that going to change for this episode?
No, not at all.
Okay. That's what I thought.
The listeners would leave. They wouldn't know what to expect anymore.
Yeah, God forbid they hear a conversation. I've got several points, and they're not. I mean, yeah, there's kind of a lean toward it, but that's based on the information, I think. But I think it'll be interesting. So you what?
You have to have the lean, right? Because you have to say, right, streaming is worse than blah blah blah, and then you have to take the affirmative and the positive.
I'm asking a question: is streaming worse than cable ever was? That's my question. That's it. Yeah. It's a question that we're going to answer throughout this episode. And we may feel differently about it. I mean, it depends on what you want, right?
Spoiler alert for those people that are on the, you know, TLDR. The answer is it depends.
It does depend.
That's fair. I think that's fair.
It is fair. Yeah. All right. Well, here, I'm going to start. So streaming didn't kill cable, right? Streaming became cable and somehow made it worse to some degree. So we were promised freedom, no ads, full seasons, creative risk. Watch what you want, when you want. Instead, we're paying more than we ever did for cable bundles, sitting through ads again, and getting half seasons of shows that vanish the moment that they don't go viral. So cable let shows grow. And this is different perspectives, right? Cable let shows grow. Streaming cancels them by week two. That's how some people feel. Cable had reruns, Identity, and schedules that built culture. Streaming dumps content into the void and blames audiences when it doesn't perform. And then you get the algorithm, right? Everybody talks about the algorithm. And that's not curation. That's a silent executive deciding your show doesn't work because of assigned parameters. We're going to talk about all of these things. At least cable knew what it was. It was just a bunch of channels that had some shows, and they might have become water cooler. They might not. Streaming is, you know, they sold us this revolution, and then they quietly rebuilt the old system. And I think everybody knew that was coming. I think we all were leaning into that pretty early on. This is what it's going to become. It's just another version of cable, more expensive version of cable. And there's less patience, less transparency, and way less respect for viewers, I think, to a degree. And the question isn't really necessarily, is streaming worse than cable? It's, were we ever meant to notice how little better it actually is? Were we just duped into a whole new system because this was where the profit margins were going? This is where it was always heading to be more profitable for the companies, because it's never really for us. It's always for the bottom line. That's what I would say. And that's kind of like my opening, and I'm going to go through several points that I've put together and see what you guys think. But I want to know, like, just offhand, you always knew this was coming?
That streaming was going to take over? Yes.
Yes, we all knew streaming was going to, once Netflix started taking over, like, we saw the slip. But did you always know it's just going to become another version of cable? I think we've talked about it for years and years and years. I just don't know if we realized how much like cable it ended up being.
I don't think it's like cable at all.
You don't?
I don't.
Okay.
Ooh, he's ready for a fight. You can see, you can hear it in his voice, and you can see it on his face.
He's already
face.
Written it down.
He's like, debate me. Come
that's
on.
That's literally what his...
I got statistics.
That's what his notes say. It's a fight. Go ahead. Why? Go for it.
Oh, why don't I think it's like Cable? I think it's a... I honestly, I think it's an unfair comparison. I look at streaming as what was the premium channels on cable when you had to pay extra for HBO, Cinemax, Showtime, etc. And so it was those premium channels were an add-on to your cable subscription. Cable was really a means to get your local channels when you couldn't pick them up over antenna. And then it started adding in a whole bunch of ancillary networks. So really,
that
cable,
you pay for, just like you do with streaming.
Well, you have to pay for it because of the retransmission fees.
I don't care why. You still paid for it. Like, it doesn't change the argument just because it's a different reason. It's still
right, but when you look at what HBO costs, what Cinemax costs, what Showtime costs, what Stars cost, when you added all those on to your cable subscription on top of it, like, those are still $10, $15 a month additions to your cable bill. Mm-hmm. So now you just buy YouTube TV and add on HBO Max and Netflix and Paramount and whatever to your YouTube TV. So really, it's no different than what we had before. It's the question is whether or not is YouTube TV, Hulu Live TV worse than cable or the same cost as cable? Because that answer is yes, that's really no different because it's just a cable replacement over the top versus over the air, over the cable.
I would argue that's the exact same system. You can try to look at it different to make a point, I guess, or to have a debate if you'd like, but Hulu TV, Hulu Live TV, YouTube TV, it's no different than cable was.
That is cable. That is exactly
sure,
the same.
Sure, the add-ons.
I think isn't that your point, pretty much, is like essentially the equivalent of quote-unquote cable today, right? Having access to live TV, having the ability to watch things that are solely on cable, and including, well, to some degree, sports, even though that's changing now too, which maybe is a different topic. But regardless, you still have the same concept of the basic access through what used to be the cable provider is essentially now either YouTube or Hulu, which I think is what Troy is saying. And all of those add-ons you had to pay for back in the day, if you will, that you still have to pay for today. Although, who was paying for Stars? Because we need to have a conversation right. about your financial
decisions
in life. I do want
to meet whoever has Stars and just be, because I don't know anyone. I really don't know anyone that has it. So if you have it and you're listening, why? What? Like, why?
Outlander?
Really? Is it? I mean, yeah, I guess. Yeah. Okay. I will say.
Is that
I
it?
I made one besmirching comment on Facebook once on our Hollywood Outsider page. Go like it. And boy, did they come for me. And I'm like, whoa, easy. I'm sorry. I didn't realize this is a religion. But apparently Outlander is. Don't mess with Outlander. So
Outlander is to Stars as Thrones is to HBO.
I guess.
As Bridgerton is to Netflix.
I guess.
Oh,
man.
Wow.
It is insane.
Interesting. Should we say maybe Stranger Things to Netflix?
Stranger Things
to Netflix. It's not as big as...
Sure.
Yeah. Bridgerton isn't as big as Stranger though. Things. It is.
I would say, yeah. I mean, this feels like a whole other debate that we don't need. But I guess my point being, whatever you want to say, it's still another version of cable. It's not grossly different. It's the question is it better than what cable was? Is it a newer, better version of it? Is it more expensive or are we saving money? I think the promise was that originally we were going to be saving money because we did in the beginning. And now it's costing us more when you really add it all up because it does add all up.
I would say I disagree and I still think streaming is better.
Okay. Well, we haven't gotten to the point yet, so
yeah.
You want to hear him out, or are you going to just make your argument and go away?
No. You just said, do you agree? And I said, no, I still disagree. Okay. Based
Fair
on
enough.
Your premise that we're paying too much.
Well, I've done the pricing, and I'm telling you, it's definitely Ooh. More. But at least, I guess it depends on what you subscribe to. Just like it did with cable, because you had to pay extra for different channels. You didn't just get all the cable channels. It wasn't like Hulu Live, where you get like 50. You know, there were different periods of cable. Some periods where you get like 10 channels and you had to pay for every add-on. And there are other periods where you got a little bit more, but you had to pay for sports, and which exists now. I mean, all these things, it's just another version of cable. They're the one best selling point is that ads were not part of it. Like, that was the big win. Like, finally we're rid of ads. And now they're bringing ads back because for a lot of people, I'm not talking about myself because I will sell a car to avoid ads. I will. I will walk to work to pay for whatever it costs.
Hallelujah. Amen. Praise Jesus. Praise
Get
Allah, whoever
a
you.
Bus pass.
Yes.
Yep. I am in. But for a lot of people, that's extreme. And I completely understand that. I mean, people put their money where they want to put it. Some people buy nice quality food. Not me. Mm-mm. I'm being ad free for my entertainment. That's what I'll pay for. But now there's they're doing everything they can to have people subscribe to these ad supported tiers because yeah, they're cheaper, but they also make more money off of them because of the advertisers, right? So we had this promised ad free freedom. Now ads are kind of unavoidable unless you want to pay that premium price. So again, we're back to what those add on channels were. Ad loads are creeping up, often unskippable and very badly timed. Peacock, I hate their ad system. I think it's terrible because that's the only one I have supported ads on because I'm not going to pay extra for a channel I don't even like. And no offense, Peacock. Sorry, I don't. I got like one thing on, and I actually want to cancel Peacock and I can't find out where to cancel it. It's so complicated to cancel these services. It really is.
Some of them, I really hate that you can't do it. You can't do it through the app.
Nope.
You can't do it. You have to go on through the desktop, though. Mm-hmm. They're like, how difficult can we make this for them? We want them to have it nearly impossible to cancel.
Absolutely true. I've been trying to cancel Peacock for 2 weeks, and it's not because I probably couldn't dig in and find it pretty quick, but I have to sit down, have the time, blah, 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 blah. And I just, that's how they get you. They know everybody's busy or they don't want to leave their couch. So they get you. But anyway, their ads are terrible. And I think cable, they at least had these predictable ad breaks. Sometimes streaming services, they just, yeah, you can see, on Peacock, you have an identifiable little yellow line that tells you here's an ad, but not every service has that. And it just kind of comes in an unnatural position. So I don't know. So where do you guys sit on the whole ad portion of this argument, I guess?
Ads have paid for TV for years.
That's not what I'm asking you.
So it's really.
I hate ads.
I agree. I hate ads. But the whole point of, I think, Aaron's thing here is that the ads are creeping back into streaming, mm-hmm. and we were promised a no ad system. We still have a no ad system. It's called pay for no ads. When you actually look at the cost of cable, the average spend in 2025, average for an HD plan with one box with no DVR with ads, it's $101 a month on average across the United States. When you look at all of the streaming services with no ads, $74 a month. So streaming, that's all the services. HBO, Apple,
bullshit.
Peacock.
I call bullshit.
I literally looked
Which
up
services?
All the numbers today.
Which services?
Okay, so we got
What does
Netflix.
All include? Does it
Netflix.
Have stars in it, my friend? Because if it doesn't have stars, it's not real.
$101 for a basic cable plan with one premium channel.
Basic cable has more channels.
Just doesn't mean it's good content.
I'm just saying, but that's also
I just look at my wallet, and my wallet says that I spent $101 on cable and didn't watch junk. I spent $74 on streaming and watched a whole hell of a lot.
Plus your internet. You got to bring your internet into that too. You have to
my internet's a completely separate bill, completely separate cost.
Same, but you have to have internet to stream.
Agree.
So,
but I have to have internet. I also have to have internet to live.
Just saying, it can't be separate. That's all. It's part of that bill.
Fine, add $100 to my internet, so that's $201 for cable and $100 to my streaming package, so that's $174. I'm still ahead on streaming.
So who are the ones that figure into your $74? And is
Netflix,
that ad-free, or is that just the ad
That's
tier?
The ad, because cable has ads, I took the ad price.
Okay.
So this is the ad-included price for Netflix, Disney, Hulu, Prime, HBO, Paramount with Showtime, Peacock, and Apple.
Okay.
That might be true. Apple doesn't have ads.
Yet. They will.
Now, if you want to bump that up, though, and go ad-free, right? Again, cable, you have to pay extra for the 4K. So I only took the HD version of the streaming services. Ad-free, all streaming services included, Netflix, Disney, Hulu, Prime, HBO, Paramount, Showtime, Peacock, Apple, $120 a month. So you're paying $20 a month for the benefit of no ads, which when I look at my cable bill, I pay $25 a month for unlimited data so I don't get charged by the bit. So I'm willing to pay that premium $25 for my internet. Why wouldn't I be willing to pay that $20 premium for my ad-free experience? Because I don't want ads. I hate ads. They suck.
That's what I'm saying. I will eat poorly to make sure I don't have ads. I'll wear the same shirt for 6 years. The shirt I'm wearing, I'm pretty sure I've had it for 6 years. That's why. No ads. Sacrifice. It's important.
$20 a month is like one breakfast out now. Eggs cost so much money at a restaurant.
Yeah. They're cheaper in the store now. So you got that going for you.
Yeah.
Nothing else is, but eggs are. So we got that.
You can cook your own eggs because you save time by not watching ads.
Well, you could have the ad version and then just make your eggs while the ads are playing.
Let's not make arguments for ads. Thank you very much.
Look, the whole point is you're promised an ad-free experience. It's still the fact that you have to pay, according to Troy's numbers, I'm not going to question him because I'm sure he checked them. $50 extra for ad-free for those particular...
20.
Well, you said 74 and 120.
Yeah, 50 from 74 to 120, yes.
So I know how math works. Gotcha. So it's almost double. That's about 75% on top of to get ad free. So you're almost paying double. So they're getting their money either way. But yeah, is it worth it? Sure. But I think, you know, more to the point is that we were all excited for this ad free experience. Now it's a premier service again. Now it's premier. The only way you're going to have it is if you pay this premier price, whatever the number is, which I acknowledge your numbers are probably right. I really want to know how much Stars is. You should have looked that up. That's really important. So some people feel like you're paying more for less. So go on to point number two. Okay. So subscription prices keep rising while episode counts shrink. So now you've got 6 to 8 episode seasons, and that's kind of the norm now, even for prestige shows. There aren't many. Maybe they go to 10. Apple has 10. For a lot of theirs. Cable seasons used to give you 12 to 22 episodes, something along those lines for a single monthly bill. So cable, you got one bill, bloated but predictable. Streaming, multiple subscriptions. You have to keep track of them. You don't, you know, often you're keeping channels that streaming channels that you don't even watch. Constant price hikes, ad tiers that negate the point. Who's the winner here? What do you think?
I think the winner is content creators. I think that gives the ability for the content creators on a streaming platform to tell the story they need to tell. If the story is 7 episodes, great. If it's 9 episodes, great. If it's 13 episodes, great.
I don't think you can get 13 anymore. If it takes 13, they're getting 8. And they have to get it told in 8.
I think it depends.
The model is condensing episodes for sure now. Yes,
very much so.
But I mean, if you look at it, traditional TV also was built that way. So you got, you know, 13 episodes, and then they picked up the back 9. So a 9-episode season was something that was very possible because you bought the 9-episode season separately. When you think
you
about
got
the
it the same year, though, Troy. I mean, come on, this isn't comparable. I understand what you're saying. Yes, you would get like 12, and then you get the back 9 or whatever, 13, and then the back 9. But you get it the same season. Now it'll be 2 years. It's Fluff TV, you'll get it the next year.
But you're making, you know, movie quality level television today compared to 10 years ago.
Sometimes.
You were making backlot, easy, reproducible set type television back in the day. It was easier to crank it out.
Would you say that Breaking Bad is what you just said? Because that was the cable show.
Right. And how many episodes did they put out?
13.
Per season?
13. Every year. Right. 13 every year. If they did that on streaming, it would be 2 years between seasons. I mean, even Reacher, who would 8 episodes of a guy beating up another guy or lots of other guys takes a year and a half to 2 years between seasons. I mean, that's a lot.
There's a lot that could go into that too, that we don't know
about. I'm not saying that's not true.
And, you know,
I'm not saying it's not true, but what I will say to this. Okay. And I think this is a fair assessment. A lot of people who love television, especially I'm a movie guy. I've always been a movie guy. I love shorter than longer, but a lot of people I know miss. That's why there's still a lot of people on network TV. They miss 22 episodes. They miss, look, you Grey's Anatomy people. You know, they miss like 22 episodes of TV. The Chicago one night show, whatever, like PD, Fire, whatever the hell, Medical. You know, they love those kinds of shows. The NCIS shows. They, you know, they love this stuff. They love 22 episodes of getting to know a character, living in the character's life, having a week to week adventure, but also seeing a little bit of character growth. And that doesn't happen on streaming, not to the same degree.
Yeah, it's a different model. It's a different audience, a different platform.
Amanda, back me up. That's what we're talking about, right? Like the difference in model.
I mean, I think it's two parts, right? Like I see where Troy's coming from too.
Sure.
Well, I just think it's varied. I don't think it's as easy as saying comparison. Like Sopranos was on HBO. It was 13 episodes. The Pitt is on HBO. HBO Max original, not even HBO.
It's exception.
It's 15 episodes.
That's the exception to the rule.
Because it, you know, because it benefits the storyteller to tell the story they want to tell. They wanted to tell the life and days of a 15-hour shift in an ER, right?
And they wanted to give a network experience. That's also part of that. They wanted to give a network TV experience because Noah Wiley's, the idea being more episodes, they can do it faster, they can come back year after year. That's not the norm on streaming. That's all I'm saying.
And honestly, like in season two of The Pit so far, like some of these episodes are kind of like they drag a little bit because of that, because they're trying to fill a 15-hour model. Like,
I would say that the model nowadays when it comes to streaming is definitely to have condensed seasons. The model of extended episode seasons, like anything past 10 episodes for a show means that it has money. It, like to the point of... You have to rethink. I think it was Troy that was saying this. You have to rethink and change what you're writing. You have to find a way to fit it, whichever one of you said that. I think that's accurate because you're getting a chance. The fact that you're even getting a show or a movie on the streaming platform, right? From the their perspective. You're not going to have your mass distribution if it's exclusive to the streaming network, which is something that I don't necessarily agree with. And I know we're going to talk about that too. But the model is definitely different. Even for the bigger shows that we have now, think about Stranger Things. You know, we mentioned that earlier, Stranger Things. That has even condensed episodes. And you could have argued that that show would have done, even in the last season, would have done even better with a couple of additional episodes. Sure.
I would make that argument for any show that condenses to Game of Thrones is literally the example.
That was my next thought is Game of Thrones. Yeah. Yep.
It's the example where it should have had two or three more episodes. It should have been fleshed out. They're in a hurry to get out of there, whatever the reason is. But condensed often, I think, tightens the story, especially these very detailed, intricate storylines. It makes it hard to really tell the full story. And then it kind of leads into my next point. They disappear and you never get an ending or anything more on the
streaming is what you're saying. They disappear streaming.
The shows disappear. They disappear without warning because now entire shows just vanished. There's licensing issues, right? There are some shows that vanish because they're not owned by the streamer. A lot of streamers, for people that don't know, are moving toward, owning all the content. That's why some shows get renewed, even though they have lesser ratings, is because they, like Netflix owns it, not Warner Brothers. Now, if Warner Brothers owns the show, yes, Warner Brothers has shows on Netflix. If Warner Brothers owns the show, it might factor into if they renew it. If Netflix owns the show, they can renew it and it costs them a lot less money because they're in charge of everything. So, you know, some of these shows disappear for those kinds of reasons.
Which is no different how it was on broadcast.
True. That's true.
You have ABC had a Warner Brothers show. They're going to renew ABC Studios show before they renew a Warner Brothers show.
That's true. And then there's the tax write-offs. I mean, you could go to, HBO Max was a Batgirl and some other write-offs.
Yeah, the WB stuff.
What's that? Yeah, they've done that. And then, of course, the mergers that may or may not happen. There's no physical media safety net for many of these originals. You know, you can't most of them you can't go out and buy. Stranger Things had like the first two seasons, I think, on physical media. I don't know if they have done the other ones. I know I haven't seen them, so I don't think so. So there's a lot
of
these shows.
That's one thing that I really don't like about streaming is you don't have, even if it were just like you get your digital download of the season, you can't download it. Like you can't retain it. You have to maintain. And I get that's part of the streaming model. I'm sure like let's retain our customer base. If they want to watch it, they have to come back on the app. But at some point it's like one, this could be an extension, right, of your profits, but also allowing people to see the content in case you decide to get the licensing changed for some reason or you move it over to another platform. That's one thing that I don't like is that you can't own your own copy of it.
Drives me nuts. Reacher had the first two seasons were on Blu-ray and 4K, and I definitely picked those up. The third season is only on DVD. There is no Blu-ray. There is no 4K. So, but it costs like almost twice as much. It's crazy. It's almost like they're trying to get you. Nah, we don't really want to sell these. We want you to go to Prime. That's what it is. And the other point is cable reruns, you know, they live forever. Streaming libraries are very unstable and disposable. Some shows will go away and you'll never see them again. Although I would say the same thing applies to cable. And it's probably easier to find them on streaming than it ever was on cable, even with on demand. So that's probably a positive, I would say. I mean, in terms of most of streaming titles, if they're owned by the streamer, stay. It's only if they're a licensing issue do they go. Do you agree with those points, Troy?
I mean, I've never been one that's like, I have to have a physical copy of something.
You don't have stuff you own? You don't have, like, Lost, the box set, or something?
I took all of those stuff and sold it back to a movie TV exchange where I took all my CDs, all my DVDs, all my movies. I bought everything, rebought everything with that back on iTunes and just have it on iTunes. Because it's like I have access to it whenever I want on any device I want. So I don't have to have a Blu-ray player on top of it. I don't have to have it connected to the internet for updates. I don't have to worry about the discs getting scratched by kids or dogs or whatever. Like, I can just turn on Lost wherever I want. And I don't even have to own it, because whether Lost is on currently on Disney Hulu right now, I believe it's on Hulu, it'll go to Netflix. And then when it's done on Netflix, it'll go back to Hulu. So it's like, it's always going to be on a streaming platform somewhere. But yes, do I have to continuously be subscribed to get the license and right to watch that? Absolutely. And I'm okay with doing that because I'm also getting 10 other shows that I'm watching at that same time to also watch my old favorite, just like I did for cable. I was happy to, have cable to watch all the Blue Sky Network stuff on USA. And at the same time, I could watch Shawshank Redemption, Forrest Gump, and Apollo 13 whenever it came on.
I think same part concepts, of you loves just different this. Delivery. I think part of you loves this just because you can do the dance every month with the package. Like, I'm going to cancel HBO Max. I'm going to subscribe to Netflix. And I'm going to cancel Paramount.
I would agree.
Right?
Yeah, because Troy seems like the type to like strategize. That's why he likes it. He's lined out all the shows that he's going to watch, which platform they're on, when he's going to reactivate the subscription, and it's probably all in a spreadsheet, if we're being honest.
Tell me on the spreadsheet where the cancel Peacock button is. I would love to know that.
You log into the Peacock app, and once you're logged in the Peacock app, there's a button in the very top right that says account.
Can't do it in the app.
And you click on account.
Can't do it in the app. You cannot.
And then when you get there, it says your plan is the premium plan, but you bought it through Xfinity, so then you have to go log into Xfinity and cancel it in the Xfinity section. Because you actually bought it from somewhere else that wasn't bought.
Peacock requires you do it on a desktop. Most of them do now. That's
the
like
the cancellation part, sure. But you can find out where the account is and what plan you have and you spend upgrade your
six
plan.
6 hours trying to get there. Fun.
It's really not that bad.
Maybe not to somebody who does it every other month, because I'm not going to play that game. I'm going to have a service. I'm just going to have a service, I guess.
I want to ask you guys if you think this is going to happen, but I'm also afraid to put it into the ethers in case it makes
what?
It
no,
happen.
No, I'm curious now. Yeah, what?
At what point do you think they're going to start charging people who, you know how AMC, A-List, if you cancel within a certain period, you're not eligible to get the same price for 6 months?
Oh, yeah.
At what point does the streaming platforms just do that? Because the cancel on a dime model can still work, but at what point do you say, okay, you left us for 3 months, your rate's going to be higher now?
Triple. It's going to be triple. That's going to happen. Because that, I will say, okay, and I'm not doing this because I feel bad, Troy. I'm not trying to put it in the ether either. If it works for you, great. I'm glad you're playing that game. I'm just too old and tired to do it.
But, which I wasn't able to do during cable, because once I had all cable or no cable.
I understand. Totally get it, except for the premium channels. You could drop HBO and pick it up again pretty quick.
Yeah.
But I see them doing that just like Netflix told us to share passwords. Everybody told us to share passwords. And then they got to a point where they're like, well, we
told
think-
Told us to.
Yep.
Let's remember that. Told us to. They encouraged it.
And said, do it. Do it. Do it.
They were the Nike ad.
Do
were,
just do it.
It was like the loss leader.
Freaking Starsky and Hutch. Do it. Do
Everybody
it.
Has a loss leader. The grocery store has loss leaders. Loss leaders are there to get you to stay with the service and get more people interested in it. And then when the service finally hit maximum capacity and they needed to make money, they're like, yeah, no more password sharing. Buy your own account.
Yeah.
And then people were in the system. And so they were like, oh my God, I need this. So I have to buy it. Yeah.
And that's why people don't like
the game.
Them. That's why they're jerks. And that's why they're going to do this to you. And then you're going to feel bad about it, because you're getting all this. I'm pretty sure you do work for Apple at this point, and I'm convinced it's going to happen to you. And then maybe you'll be a little bit more on the this ain't so great chain, because they are going to get to that point. They are.
My daughter uses my Netflix account. All you have to do is come home and see Dad once a month. Log into Netflix on your phone, and sign in so that it knows you're at the home address. And then when you go back to wherever you are, you can keep watching Netflix. That's not a problem.
Hear that, Netflix? No, that's going to be locked out. All right. So moving on.
Is it bad? I actually pay for one person to have extended access to my Netflix.
What do you mean?
Because they're not in the same state.
$7.99 or whatever?
Yeah, I pay the extra.
So if I have the two person or 4-person 4K account and someone else wants to jump onto my account, they just pay a $7 charge. That's pretty great if you ask me.
Yeah, I don't think that's a bad deal, Amanda. That's what you're asking.
No. I'm just saying it's crazy I do that.
The only way you couldn't do it anymore because of how they have
paying $20 yourself.
Man, I swear. I can speak too.
Sorry, there was a delay. It was a delay.
You can actually go, if you're near in the same city, like Trey was saying, you can go over, log in at his house and, you know, you're on his IP address and you'll be fine like once a month. But if you're not in the same city, that's going to be a problem. So pay the $8. I do think that's actually a pretty good deal, and it helps somebody out that doesn't want to pay $25 a month or whatever. Mm-hmm.
Right.
So I think that's pretty good. Now, cancellation culture. This is what a lot of people talk about when it comes to streaming, because I think shows do get axed a little faster than they probably would have for a multitude of reasons, right? So if they're not instant global hits, they're already on the bubble, which is what they used to call when a show was maybe going to get picked up, maybe wasn't. There's very little room for word of mouth growth and creative course correction. What I mean by that is if a show is, you know, oftentimes when a show is doing the 13 on network TV, going back to those days or cable, right? So it's going week to week to week. They can change course during this because they're actually filming while those shows are airing. So you might have seen 3 episodes. They're only on episode 6 or 7, right? So they can change course if the audience is saying, this is a terrible plot point. Streaming, you can't do that because all those episodes are already done. They're already filmed. They're already ready to go. So you can't change course. That's what I mean by change course correction. So the word of mouth doesn't work for them. They get very little benefit except for it makes some of their shows blow up. And cable did allow shows to find an audience over time. I don't think you really have that with streaming. Now, this is where I would say cancellation is a problem on streaming. Even though I love streaming just for a lot of reasons, cancellation is a little excessive. They also have too much content, and a lot of it's algorithm-based. So, Amanda, I know you've been hit a few times on this one. Do you agree? Do you feel like you've been gut punched a few too many times more on streaming, or you feel like it's about the same as it was on regular TV or cable TV?
I think the ratio, right? And I'm sure there's like an actual mathematical equation that can get us this, but I'm not the one who's going to pull all the numbers for the data. But I'm sure the ratio of cancellations to quantity of shows is still in a reasonable range to what it used to be with cable. The thing that I am keeping in mind is how much more content there is on these streaming apps that are inherently going to increase the number of cancellations. Now, how they determine the cancellations can be a little bit annoying to me because I feel like there are some shows that, like, how did you determine that you were going to cancel this one, my guy? Who decided to sit in this room and say, nah, we're cutting it? And then you have fans who have an outburst that are like, please, let us keep the show. And they're like, well, on second thought, I guess there is money here. And that's the part that's frustrating.
It's also a matter, again, I know Aaron doesn't like to normalize the theater numbers, you know, into today's dollars versus yesteryear's dollars.
I sure don't.
But you got to normalize the data and over a period of time. So I actually took 2020 to 2023. And in that 3-year period, the streaming rate cancellation was actually 12.2% of all series were canceled on the streaming platforms across all those streaming platforms mentioned earlier on the cost breakdown, where broadcast in the same exact period canceled 26.6% of their shows.
Mm.
See, I knew somebody would be able to pull the data. Why did I speak anecdotally when I could have just had Troy bring the numbers? Well,
but that's broadcast. So to go to Aaron's point is cable and streaming different?
Yep.
Cable actually canceled 7.2% of its shows in the last 3 years. But there's also far less channels making the same type of original content that you would find on a streamer, for example.
So I would still like to see the ratio, though, right? And like the peak pinnacle times, if you will, of cable versus streaming in their peak times, right? Because looking from 2020 to 2023, it's going to be a little bit different. So 2020 to 2023, I would say, is probably the most optimal streaming time period because of COVID and everybody being stuck inside. Mm-hmm. And I would say closer to 2020 because you had the content that was still already created, ready to go out in 2020, potentially 2021. Then we saw a little bit of a dip down because content couldn't be created.
Strikes, COVID as much.
Yeah, all of that. Yep. But I would love to see that comparison. And I would imagine that at some point you start to see streaming having a higher cancellation rate just in the scheme of how many that they have. So even though like there's those big ones that come up, that bubble up, and we're like, wow, I can't believe that got canceled, there's so many more shows that are nobody even saw because there's just so much content that it didn't get an audience. It didn't have enough time to get an audience. To Aaron's point around that you've consistently made around water cooler conversations, that doesn't exist unless you have a really strong, sustainable, very tension-driven show that you can have water cooler conversations week to week over. Game of Thrones, I think, was a very notable one there. Stranger Things, I'm honestly impressed. They managed, even with themselves, and that how significant and prominent that show is, that they managed to keep it successful because of how many breaks they had between it. Troy is raising his hand.
Well, I was waiting until you were done.
That's new. I think this. It's like he's evolved while we've been doing the podcast today.
Part of the challenge is that we keep talking about streaming in the same language that we used for traditional broadcast and cable. I don't look at any show on Netflix or Hulu or whatever as being canceled. I look at it as the season's over. And if I'm lucky enough to get another season, great. And if I'm not lucky enough to get another season, okay. It's fine, because what the producers, writers, creators, and all of them have to do is think about writing their shows differently. They have to write it like Westworld did, where every single season could stand alone as its own season and its own story.
But they're not doing that.
But they could set up for something in the future. So like, take Dark Matter on Apple TV, for example. Dark Matter is one book. The guy that wrote the book was helping behind the scenes on the show. He said there was ever only going to be one season. And then they opened up a whole bunch of like potential threads of where the story could go if they wanted to come back for a season two. And then some conversations happen and, oh, look, we're going to get a season two of Dark Matter. I never expected one, but now I get one and I'm super excited for it.
That's because, again, the exception. That's not the rule.
I think there are more shows on streaming that would consider themselves a contained season or contained story than there are the cliffhanger. Because when you cancel something on a cliffhanger, that's shitty. That we had happen all the time on broadcast.
It happens all the time on streaming. I think that's disingenuous. There's a lot of limited shows, just like there were a lot of TV movies and limited shows. I mean, yeah, I think there are more limited series today than there were on cable. I will give you that. I will concede that. But that you think that they're not making shows that can't have multiple seasons, that's why they're making them. That's the whole reason why they keep pumping them out, is they want to make it a show that's going to last. Virgin River is already on season 7. It's going to hit season 8 soon. Like, they want, just like TV has every other mode, whether it be network or cable or anything else, they want those shows to continue. They are building them. That's why there's cliffhangers at the end of so many of them. Very few of them that are not advertised as a limited series do not have some sort of connective tissue at the end that will build a bridge to season 2. So that's why people get so frustrated when they cancel them, and they officially announce them as cancellation. I get the press releases all the time. The streaming networks themselves call them cancellations. They don't call them, we decided we're not going to go forward with Stranger Things. That's not the example, but shows that were canceled, they say, we're canceling this show because of, you know, sometimes they give reasons, sometimes they don't. Usually it's didn't find the right audience, whatever.
Warrior Nun. You saw Warrior Nun.
Parts of it. Yeah, I didn't see the whole thing.
Okay, so you never finished that one. Because like the ones that I'm thinking of that might be considered like canceled on Netflix specifically, I'm thinking like The OA, Santa Clarita Diet, Mindhunter, Warrior Nun, and maybe Glow. Because season 3 ended like in a mid-arc kind of thing. But I think there's a lot less canceled, I'm upset, you didn't finish the story type of cancellations on streaming than there were on broadcast or cable.
I mean, Waterfront canceled, Pulse canceled. These are just recent ones. The Residents canceled. Like, these are shows that are definitely canceled, and people were looking forward to where it went next. Yeah, you got your Sense8 and your whatever the show was. I don't remember what the show
OA.
Was. But sure, there are those shows. But there are a ton of other shows that are like the Virgin Rivers or the wannabe Bridgertons, the wannabe this, the wannabe that. They want to have 5-6 seasons out of, and it just doesn't happen. And they cancel them because it didn't hit the algorithm growth that they wanted.
And that's okay, because that's the model.
I get it. I'm just saying, like, that's a major frustration for people. And I do think a lot of the reason why people get frustrated with streaming is because these shows, that's why so many of the streamers are going back to week to week, so they can build word of mouth to keep their shows going.
Yeah, that's the other impact that you're seeing, not necessarily from the company standpoint, but as a response to the new model, if you will, around television, is that people are less inclined to try and start a new show now unless they know that it's already got a renewal. True. Or that multiple seasons have happened and that it's worth getting into. And if a show was canceled or it ended, one of the first questions that I always get from people when I recommend it is, does it end on a cliffhanger? Does it continue? Is it worth my investment, right? And that didn't used to be the question. The question used to be, was it good? Or, you know, is it a drama or is it a thriller? Like the genre topics, or, you know, what's your taste and is it taste compatible? Now it's, is this even worth my time? Because I'm tired of getting invested and then having that taken away from me.
And the algorithm thing is very frustrating for people. There are people that don't understand what that means. And I'm not trying to speak down to you. There are definitely people that don't know what that means. And what that means is several of these streamers, Netflix in particular, they've made a very famous go of creating content based on very popular aesthetics to their algorithm. Like, you know, We know Ryan Reynolds does well. We know Cars do well. We know Michael Bay does well. Why don't we make Six Underground or whatever that movie was? You know, why don't we make a movie that tailors directly to that? And so on and so forth. And they make shows that way too. It's based on, we know Bridgerton's popular. We know this is popular. We know that's popular. Make a show, talk to our writers and producers, and let's hear a pitch that has these elements. The algorithm is everything for a lot of these particular content creators. And so discovery is driven by thumbnails and autoplay, not necessarily curation, because some people will watch, they'll be flipping through Netflix and they'll just watch a bunch of stuff, and that adds to the algorithm. It builds this algorithm. And if it doesn't get input that you like something because you're watching it, or you click the I like this button, whatever, then it doesn't feed the algorithm and you might not see anything more like it. And I find it fascinating because I love that they're using our interests to drive things forward. But I also find it a bit of a struggle bus, if you will, because I think it stunts creativity to some degree, because you're trying to fit the algorithm as opposed to fit the story.
I think that was only the case initially on how they were building the streaming services so that they could get things people would watch to get them to be sticky subscribers. Now you're getting into the point where you're getting the traditional TV networks to come into the streaming game, and you're getting people like Netflix buying a traditional movie studio and Warner Brothers and TV studio in order to do the things that they need to do to keep up with, say, the Peacocks, Paramounts, ABC, Disney, all that fun stuff. So I think that you're going to see a tonal shift in that, where you're going to get the more traditional creator-led content that's not based just on the algorithm. You're still going to get
You're going to get
network notes. Netflix is going to say, like, you need more Michael Bay booms and you need more whatever of this, right? Because they know that it's going to work. But you're going to get more of the traditional HBO Star Showtime type content on these streaming services in the coming years.
That's not a data-based
correct
statement. The recommendations that populate everybody's feed, no matter what service you have, that's feeding an algorithm. That's designed inherently to feed an algorithm. because every one of those that you hit, that you ping, it's giving you more, obviously more recommendations, yes, but it's also collecting that data to fuel their development further, to fuel where they're headed. They're very, very sharp companies. They're very AI driven, and they're very focused on those algorithms because that keeps the addictions going. I get pumped mystery shows every day on every service I have because I like mystery shows, right? Murder mysteries, right? I love them. So they always continuously pop up, and new ones are popping up left and right because of that curation of those algorithms. I don't see that going away. I think if anything, it will be amped up. I wouldn't be surprised if ChatGPT starts writing some scripts later.
I would agree. I think that the algorithms are definitely a data set used not only for the content creation and development, but and you know, who's going to get renewed and all of those great things, but also what do they want people to be writing, which I think is where your content or your writing stuntedness comes in, where we're not getting as much diversity and exploration of thought. The one thing that I really, really don't like about the algorithms is some platforms I use just to rewatch stuff.
Oh, sure.
That is like kind of my comfort food, right? That doesn't mean that's the only thing I'm interested in. It's just that you happen to have a service that sucks with other genres or doesn't offer the things that I want. Yeah. And so now are you telling me that because this is the only thing I'm really watching on your platform, that this is what I'm going to only get? There's always a barrier when it comes to information and data. Like, you still have to have human connection, which is why AI can only do so much, because think about the conversation that we're having here and mm-hmm. talking about our own algorithms, but all of the things that fall outside of that, right? All of the things that you couldn't pick up on just from looking at what I like, what I fail to even react to. I don't react to everything that I loved. So if I don't give it a double thumbs up on Netflix that I loved it, does that mean I'm not going to see that anymore? That's where I think there's only so much you can do with that information too.
And I can give you a very recent example. So literally within the last month, Rip came out, loved Rip. I had a great time with it. Matt Damon and Ben Affleck were doing the rounds. I think it was Joe Rogan. Don't quote me on that, but I'm pretty sure it was Joe Rogan. They were doing a long extended interview, and they talked about some of the notes that they got from Netflix, right? And one of the notes was, make sure you repeat the plot multiple times, like 3-4 times within the throughout the movie, because people are looking at their phones. They know people are looking away. Like, the algorithm is telling them when you create this content, you got to have, go look at the most recent season of Stranger Things. It got a whole lot of flack because it keeps repeating this very detailed plot, right? And I'm telling you, yeah, a lot of that is because that's what Netflix's algorithm is telling them to do. Like, you have to repeat this complicated plot multiple times because people are always on their phone. So they have to do that. They have to have like an immediate action in the beginning, like in the first 5-10 minutes or something along those lines, because that's how you keep people hooked. Like, they have algorithms telling people that have Oscar winners, Oscar winning storytellers, Ben Affleck and Matt Damon, what it takes to make a good movie, because they know their viewers. So they are absolutely catering that. And that is going to get more and more reliant on that technology, because they can build these things that way. And it's going to hurt creativity. It's going to hurt originality. That's my opinion.
Right, because then it's just rinse and repeat. There's no originality and variety in your storytelling methodology. Yeah. If it's you have to hit the beat, hit this at this beat, and then you need to do this by, you know, the third act, and here's essentially your story structure, which to an extent, right, that helps with entry level writers, if you will, but for those that are seasoned, that know what they're doing, there's ways for you to shift around. I mean, think about this algorithm trying to apply to a Quentin Tarantino movie, like just using him as an example. His story, the way that he writes his scripts, are written so different from the traditional, like what you would be taught as a script in a screenwriting class? Is the cadence, the structure, how many pages, what you're, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Like completely different. So then you would never have somebody like a Quentin Tarantino making films, at least through, you know, XYZ platform.
And I want to, because somebody's going to say, like, try to scream this, like, well, to shut your point down, because Tarantino has a movie coming out on Netflix. But for anyone that's saying that, Amanda, you're absolutely correct. That was a script that he wrote. They took it as he wrote it. It was a deal he made with Brad Pitt. And David Fincher is going to direct it. It was like one of the few directors he would allow to direct his script, and it has to stick to his script. It's a very rare exception to the rule. And I'm just making sure before anybody says, well, just so you know, Tarantino did write a script. That's the gist behind that. It was a fluke, and Brad Pitt asked him if he could use that script because they wanted to get it made. Simple as that.
Well, and that's a great example still to my point. Thank you for furthering it, because Quentin Tarantino is an established writer and director that
he has the clout.
You're willing to be able to take the I guess out of the exception, you're willing to give the exception to him, right? But if this was applied before Quentin Tarantino ever started writing and directing, now you've stunted that individual, that I don't realm of thought, from being ever put into our universe, our world of entertainment, movies and film.
But I don't think,
like, you can only have so many parameters and structure before you do start to dissipate the value of individual writing.
But I think that's the benefit of the streaming wars now, is that we have multiple providers. So I don't have to go to Netflix, which was my only option when Lilyhammer and all this stuff was coming out. And I had to succumb to whatever Netflix wanted me to do, because that's the only game in town. Sure. So I have the ability to say, like, I don't want to follow your Netflix guidelines and repeat the plot every 10 minutes. I'm going to go over to Peacock or Paramount or Apple or whoever. And I have that freedom. And I think Netflix is going to realize that they can't necessarily rely on what's worked all the time. Because when you rely on what's worked before, you go away. Just like Kodak, just like Blockbuster, things die over time. And Netflix is going to die if they don't change. And I think that's why they're looking at buying Warner Brothers, because they know they need to change.
I think most of these streamers are following the same set of examples. They're using the algorithms to build their content.
Well, and that helps with more of the independent filmmakers, right? And they don't have the options. If they get an offer from Netflix and they have to change their script, guess what? They're probably going to take the offer and change their script, because they don't have the ability. They can't do Rocky anymore. And saying, I'm going to go to this person. Well, you don't give me what I want. I'm going to go to this other one. You know what I mean? There's certain people that can wield that, but there are others that can't. And that's predominantly the independent. Now, the flip side to that is there's more inclusion for independent filmmakers to get content out there, to get their names created. Think about how many people have started their journey from something new in Netflix or Disney Plus or whatever it may be, and then their career has flourished because they just had the chance to be seen and exposed to.
I'll tell you, just to side quest off of that, I'm pretty impressed with, do you guys know who Markiplier is? He's a YouTuber, like YouTube is streaming, and he became a huge YouTuber, funded his own movie. It's called Iron Lung. It's been out. It's already like had its run basically, but it was massively successful in terms of, you know, it's like a $2-3 million budget and made over $30 million worldwide. So he's recouped his budget multiple times. So there's a positive for streaming to lead to originality. I mean, it's a different kind of streaming. It's YouTube. It's not the same as what we're talking about. But I do think that story is worth telling, and I hope more of that happens, because I think that's the new version, what you were talking about with independent filmmakers, Amanda. I think that's the new version of how independent film gets done. I think.
By the way, Markiplier just looks like a knockoff Adam Driver.
Fair. He does. Sure. But but he just made himself a movie star.
And that's cool.
And I think that's awesome. And that's kind of like what happened in the old days, right? With Good Will Hunting and Clerks and things like that. Like, they went out and made their own reality. So it can still happen. It's just a different way of happening. And I kind of want to move.
Broadcast has its own algorithm generator, though, too, when you think about it in the long term.
Not like this, though. They didn't have real data. They were going by Nielsen. Yeah,
they're going by one guy, Dick Wolf.
Yeah, they had one dude, and they also had a bunch of whatever Nielsen sent back. Whenever people got the $2 in the mail, and they sent that back. Like, they have real data now that tells them exactly what people will watch. They know exactly how long you watch it. They know on average, every show, they know how long every single person has watched that particular, every episode of that particular show or movie. They know all that. And they use, I get why they use, I'm not saying I don't get it. I understand it. I'm just saying it's stunting creativity and originality because they have parameters that you have to follow, but they're paying for it. So that's the deal. So content overload, we've kind of talked about that. Like there's so many shows. Kind of we've talked about that ad nauseum.
But there's not so many shows because you just made the argument earlier that we only get 8 episodes of something. So really,
no, when but I it's talk more, about that, but it's more titles.
I get to, instead of one book a year for my $101, I get 4 books a year for my $74.
No, you get 600 books a year.
That's great. I'm getting so much more value for my $120 bucks.
But that's also why they're getting canceled. I feel like that 12% number is missing. I have to see like all the parameters in that because it just feels low. And I know I'm going with a gut, I guess, but it feels low. And
what's the percentage of total number of series created over that period of time versus the ones canceled over that period of time?
Okay.
So there's a shit ton of stuff getting made. So yes, the number is going to be low on the cancellation rate.
Fair enough. Okay.
Which was the point of like, there aren't getting as many canceled as you think there are because there's so many more getting created.
Well, when you put, hang on. Now you gave some parameters there. So I would say that also lots more can be canceled and they're just filling the spots with a new show, right? Is that a fair assessment?
Because the show might be shit and therefore
that's not what I asked show you. That might be better. I asked you, you say you're going by data. So I'm saying think critically. If you're saying based on shows created versus shows not being
renewed.
So basically the new shows are technically filling the old spots. So doesn't that throw that percentage off?
No, I mean, new minus old divided by old is still the same.
No, I'm just saying like they're canceling a lot and they're just filling it with new stuff.
That's kind of how that works. No, this didn't work. Let's try something else. This didn't work. Let's try something else.
Just sounds like we're talking about the numbers.
I'm saying the percentage is higher than 10%. It's not 10% of shows that were like 500 shows were made last year. 10% of those shows, it's more than 10% that don't get brought back for another season. That's what I'm saying. If 600 shows were made this year and next year 500 shows come back, it's not a matter of those are the same 500 shows. Something along those lines. So the percentage could be higher. It's just you're going by the absolute totals. I understand.
Absolutely. Over a 3-year period.
Okay. I get it. Okay. But there is a lot of content. So now the weekly releases thing. I think this is a no-brainer. Cable wins on this one, but let's talk. So weekly releases were better for TV conversation. You know, they're called water cooler shows. Binge. Why I think everybody loves binge. I mean, God, that's what made Netflix who they are. It's what made most streamers who they are.
Mm-hmm.
But binge drops, they burn hot. They vanish fast. You never hear from them again. People watch them. You know, His and Hers came out in January and everybody was talking about it for a week and a half. And then no one's talked about it since, you know, I mean, that's what happens with binges. Weekly episodes, they build tension. You can start bouncing those theories around with your friends. You can get online and start arguing about things that happened or didn't happen. You're seeing that now with the Night of the Seven Kingdoms, where people are starting to get into that show. Cable understood pacing long before streaming kind of rediscovered it. And I feel like that's probably, if you had to point to one thing that is stronger with cable than streaming for definite, I think this is it. Because you see so many of the streamers now going to that model where they drop 2 or 3 episodes and then it goes week to week to week. Apple, I don't think, has done any binges that I'm aware of.
Yeah, they drop 2 as the premiere, like a 2-hour premiere, old TV model style, and then go week to week after that.
Because they want the water cooler talk. And podcasts. So
they also use their algorithm to understand, like, when are we dropping devices? When do people buy an iPhone? When do people buy an Apple TV? When do people buy an iPad? Because they'll get 3 months free of Apple TV with that device purchase. That's
smart.
So they're timing their releases out to say, like, and here's new shit that's dropping for your 3-month renewal or 3-month trial. So that way you'll stick with the service past that 3-month period because they'll drop their next new thing 3 months later. So when you're talking about the algorithm, they're not using the content as the algorithm generator. Mm-hmm. They're using their product line to decide what their release schedule is going to be and how to keep people subscribed to Apple TV past that 3-month trial subscription.
How much do you have in stock in Apple stock, or do they have you employed?
It's just my whole house is wired. That's the problem.
Did you get a T-shirt at least? What do you get?
But once you're in the that's the thing. Once you're in the system, it's system lock, right? It's we have Apple phones, we have Apple computers, we have Apple iPads, we have Apple TV. Well, we moved away from Apple TVs and went to Rokus because you can get the Apple TV app on the Roku, which is much better, my opinion.
Troy starts talking about Apple, and it's like he's in 2x speed himself.
Yeah.
It's called love. It's called love.
Love.
Happy Valentine's
Exciting
Day.
And new.
But I think that's part of the conversation on the pricing side is that a lot of this stuff gets bundled into something else and you don't think about it, right? So like I get my Apple TV through my Apple One subscription. I get my HBO through my wireless subscription. I get my Disney through my credit card points because they pay for it every month. I get my whatever other one I have. Well, Paramount Plus is paid through the credit card points. Peacock
Dude,
is paid through
what?
The Xfinity, you know, because I have internet.
What are you even paying for?
He has his own algorithm. That's what he has.
He does.
Yeah. I'm paying for Netflix. That's the only thing I pay directly to a service.
I'm paying for a lot of them and my back suddenly hurts.
I'm never switching off of AT&T specifically because of the fact that I get HBO included.
Can we come back to what the subject was, which is binge versus weekly TV?
Conversation. I do miss the conversational aspects of TV shows where they're released, even if it's the Apple style where you're dropping two episodes and then you're going weekly from there. But I also don't think every show requires this.
Oh, definitely not. Just like every show didn't require a TV podcast, yet we still did them for Law and Order.
Well, here's what I would say. Every show that I really, these days, and I love binging, I really do, but I prefer to have shows that I can talk to other people about. And I don't want to have to watch all 8 episodes the minute they drop to have that conversation. I can't remember the last, Amanda's very different than I and Troy, I think, because Troy and I will enjoy a show. I think Amanda gets through a show. You know what I mean? Like I feel like you're always, I finished this show this weekend. It was very good. I'm like, this weekend, how did you get 8 episodes knocked out in a weekend?
Look.
Dedication, apparently.
I don't have kids. I don't know what to tell you.
Fair enough.
It helps out.
I'm sure
2x speed on the 2x speed on the app.
Absolutely not, Troy. We're not talking about this again. We're not doing
can't
that.
Can't do it. Can't do it, man. Sorry. But not every show. There are definitely, His and Hers is definitely an example where I binged it and it was an exception to the rule.
It was only a 4-hour movie. It wasn't hard to binge. It's different than an 8 hours of content and like Stranger
Things. I normally just don't watch that many things in a row anymore. Like I want it to be broken up. I prefer movies. I like 2 hours and I get a break and the story's over. I love that. That's just how I prefer stories are told. I don't want to watch 45 episodes of anything anymore, except the comfort food, like Amanda was talking about, because there's too much content to some degree. But when I get into a show, I like weekly. I like at the very least, you know, maybe 2 episodes and then we can talk about it. I love talking to my friends about stuff that I watch, and you can't do that as often with binging because everybody's watching it on a different schedule, and that makes it very, very hard to know if someone has even seen where you are in something, and that's frustrating. I love with weekly, are you caught up? Yep. Okay. What did you think of this moment? You know, whereas binging, what episode are you on? Shit, what happened in that episode? Okay, I don't remember if the thing that I want to talk to you about actually happened.
That's
yet.
True.
You know,
that's
it's
true.
Frustrating.
That happens to me all the time.
I think that one, cable TV, still wins. I just think weekly releases, and don't get me wrong, I get it. Some people love binging, and I'm not taking away because, hey, we all got pretty excited when we first got the model, right? And then it just became everything as opposed to, here's 5 shows. Now it's 400 shows a year that are bingeable, and I just don't think they're all worth that. I don't care what the algorithm says.
I guess I think I'm past the binging phase or I just don't watch enough on Netflix.
Then you probably prefer the weekly then, right?
I don't know if
Plus
I prefer.
You mostly watch Apple and they're all weekly. So,
I mean, I don't mostly watch. I'm looking at right now. I have Starfleet Academy, Hijack Industry, Knight of Seven Kingdoms are the current and Grey's Anatomy are the current week to week shows that are in my queue as we speak.
But what was the last show you binged?
Probably The Diplomat on Netflix.
That was what, December?
Yeah, maybe. I think it was. Yeah.
So you don't do it that often.
I don't do it because not everybody releases it in binge mode anymore.
That's what I'm saying. That's my point. That's what I'm saying. Like cable is I think weekly is the still the right way to go, because I just don't think anyone's getting the bang out of their buck for binging dumps anymore. I mean, even Netflix with Stranger Things, they broke it into 3 freaking pieces because they wanted to stretch those subscriptions out.
Which is a smart play by them.
Absolutely. I'm not knocking it.
I'm cool with like a 3-episode drop, because like even when Broadcast wrote like a 3-episode arc, like I it was killer to have to wait week to week to see what the resolution of that arc was going to be.
It's a movie.
Like, yeah, give me the 3-episode movie. And then next month, give me another 3-episode movie. And next month, give me another 3-episode movie. And you'll keep me locked into the price forever until you raise the price. And then I'll go, is your movie any good?
I think we all agree on this one. Binge it if you can, if you want to. But there's something about that water cooler conversation now, that matters.
I have taken a week-to-week show and waited till it was done.
I do it all the
before,
time.
Yep.
Before binging it.
Yep. I do it all the time. All the time. Shows I don't care about what water cooler conversations I have. I'm just like, I want
to
see that. Yeah,
some of them don't, you don't need to talk to anybody about.
Exactly. Some of them.
Or not enough people are watching it where it's like, this isn't even relevant to others.
Or maybe it's embarrassing. Maybe I should be ashamed I'm watching it. All right.
Fair.
Yeah, well, I want to know what happens on Virgin River Season 7, Aaron, when you get done with it.
I'll tell you. I'll let you know. Old Max, boy, what's going to happen with those two? I think the character's name's Max. Max and Jack, I think. Yeah.
Dear Lord.
The downside to all this is that creators do have less leverage because they don't have the back-end participation, the residuals. They're very weak if they have them at all. Again, Ben Affleck and Matt Damon, I give them a lot of credit. They started their own studio to where they built in bonuses if things perform very well, which I think is great. But most of the actors on streaming don't have that. You know, they just work it into their contract. Now, don't get me wrong. This is more about us. So do you think streaming is starting to feel a little anti-viewer? Because the content gets buried. This is my final point. Because the content gets buried or instead of promoted. You know, because I can't say Dave Chappelle dropped a stand-up special. They just dropped a stand-up special. There was no promotion about it. Now, granted, he's an exception. He didn't need to. But there's a lot of shows that end up like that, where I just find them one day and they've been there for a long time. And I'm like, how? Mm-hmm. What did that happen?
How did you not recommend me this?
Exactly. Exactly.
Question mark.
We've all got a list that somebody like, hey, you got to watch this. Yeah, my list is a scroll, dude. It's whatever the Declaration of Independence, if you read it in fine print. Like, it's just very long. This list is very long. I can't keep up with it. And people love to send you, hey, you got to check this out. Did you watch this? No, man. No time. I can't watch everything. It's impossible anymore. And
I start to forget them. There's so many recommendations where people bring it up, especially once they know you're really into movies and TV. Mm-hmm. And even more so if they're aware that you're a critic, then all of a sudden everything they watch is being recommended to you. And you're like, I don't think you know me. I don't remember anything that you just said, because that does not sound like my type of content. And then they just have so many that it's hard to even keep up with it, too.
Well, and the platforms themselves will push what they want you to watch as opposed to what you want to watch. Oftentimes, like I said, I watch a couple of mystery shows. That's all I'm getting now. And it's like their most recent ones. And I was just like, no, that's not what I want right now. That's not what I want. But it's doing what the algorithm does. It's just very tiring. And I will say, I've noticed this, right? There are less either memorable shows that are in streaming, or there's just so much content, I've stopped remembering some of them.
I definitely think the latter more so than anything.
Explain.
It's too much to remember. It's too much to keep up with.
Which is great, because when there's a show hole,
No.
Then I can go like, oh, there was that thing I wanted to watch in the show hole. And I can go and watch the thing at that point in the show hole.
I don't think it's great. I don't. I do not. I think if, you know, most of my life, when I watch something great, I could tell you so many things that happened, and oftentimes I'd rewatch it. Who has time to rewatch hardly anything anymore? Stranger Things is my probably one example. I've rewatched Westworld, Game of Thrones, that sort of thing. But there are very few shows in the last 10 years that I've gone back and rewatched. The last 30 years, 40 years, 30 years before that, I rewatched shows all the time and still watch new stuff. It's impossible.
Well, you had more capacity because you were limited mm-hmm. in what you could choose from. I tend to rewatch the shows that I don't have to have full attention for. Like, for example, if I'm getting ready in the morning and it takes me some time to get ready, I'm a woman, okay? We'll just note that, right? It takes me time to get ready. So I'll put on an episode of a show just for background noise. That doesn't mean I'm truly rewatching every minute of it because I know I can miss minutes here and there, mm-hmm. right? If my blow dryer's going to dry my hair, it doesn't matter. It's fine. And so it's something like Bridgerton. I have rewatched, quote unquote, season 4, part 1. But that's not like fully rewatching it. It's just because, well, I need something on the background noise.
And you know it. You don't have to pay attention.
Yep.
It's easier. I watch Psych almost exclusively anymore because I haven't memorized. Mm-hmm. I don't need to pay attention to it, but I like it. It's soothing. It's like, it's like ice cream.
It's your comfort food. Mm-hmm.
Delicious.
I only watch stuff when other people start rewatching or start watching it for the first time.
What do you mean? Like someone like you know is watching something you love?
Yeah, somebody picks up Westworld out of the blue or somebody picks up Alias out of the blue. I'll probably go ahead and like watch a couple episodes. And then if I watch a couple episodes, then I'm like, oh, shit, I'm hooked again. So I'm on my sixth run through of Lost at this current present time. When I have a free hour that I'm not doing anything, I'll throw on an episode and just catch up to see what's going on.
Nothing like Troy catching up with Lost.
But those are all old shows.
Scrubs. I started Scrubs again, too, because of the upcoming season.
I get it. But like last 5 years, name a show you've rewatched. Last 5 years.
That's aired in the last 5 years?
So a new show from within the last 5 years that you've rewatched, not Stranger Things.
Game of Thrones, House of the Dragon, Stranger Things, Bridgerton. What else? The Pit.
Not many.
I mean, I feel like it's a good chunk.
Well, for you, I'm saying I don't have many. I haven't
watched a single thing that has released in the last 5 years over again.
Exactly.
Wow.
See?
Wow.
That I can think of. Maybe Ted Lasso.
Okay, there you go. I have rewatched Ted Lasso. Done. Problem solved.
Severance. I even rewatched some of that.
I
can't even
get through. I had to rewatch Severance just to understand it the first season.
Truly.
The one
Pluribus,
thing I will,
Pluribus, at least I understand. I don't get it, but I understand it.
The one thing I will say that I think streaming has mastered is the continue watching button. I feel like no matter what platform, I just love that that's there because I don't want to have to, you know, I just want to pick up where I left off. Even if it was, because you'd be amazed how many times I come back to something from like a month ago and it's like, oh, I never did finish that. Let me try this one again. And I love that I can just pick up where I left off.
However, Netflix is like, you know, increasing depression levels because now they added the like only two left. Oh, this is the last episode. And I'm just like, why do you do this to me? I don't want this to be over.
See, it works for you.
I don't want to know because then I feel like I'm taken more off guard. If I don't know how many episodes, if I know that it's the last episode, obviously this, it's well, very yeah,
apparently
hard
you're just
to
letting them bleed episode to episode. Like
I am.
You sit on the couch and you're like, I'm here for the day. Let's go, guys. God damn. Who needs to pee when
there's
you got a
breaks.
Catheter?
There's breaks. All right.
I hope so.
Oh, for your shoot. Sake. I feel bad. I forgot. I'm also watching The Pit as one of my, it wasn't on my list because I watched the last episode. So I marked it off my list. So it wasn't on my list, but I'm also watching The Pit week to week.
See, I haven't even started the second season yet. I'll wait till it's all out there. And then I'll still probably watch it weekly, to be perfectly honest. I'm not going to binge it. But to your point,
like too much content. Mm-hmm. Like, I want to watch Hijack. It's on my list. I watched the first episode, and now I'm already two episodes behind.
Oh, the second season?
Yeah.
I'll never watch that show again.
That was me trying to keep up and remember the day that these new episodes launch, but Landman, I kept getting behind because I just forgot that I have a weekly show.
See, this is where, let's come back to that. So you were talking about how many episodes are left. I have gotten, that doesn't do anything to me because I will ditch a show in a heartbeat anymore. If it starts losing me, like Landman is a prime example. The first season was one of my favorite shows. Second season, I thought was terrible. And
Real quick before you get in your thought, I completely agree with your sentiment around Landman because you and I have had this conversation where you felt like season two was becoming more about
soap opera.
The mom and daughter. Mm-hmm. And in one of the last like 2-3 episodes of the second season, there was more screen time for their storyline than any land manning happening.
Absolutely. They spent more time debating pronouns and having a very terribly written episode, which, granted, the storyline actually has a decent conclusion, I guess.
It's yeah,
I mean,
cute.
It's fair.
Yeah.
But what's funny is the last episode ends up being everything you wanted the entire freaking season to be. So I'm like, okay, I'll come back, but I will tell you, I am pretty good at cutting things off. So if it episode one, I am not. If it goes back to soap opera, I'm out. I'm done. I will not stay. And I've gotten pretty good.
That was a really good click, click, clap.
You're welcome. You're welcome.
Thank you.
Well, Amanda, if you're forgetting what to watch, I'll let you know that this episode is brought to you by the TV Time app.
Jeez.
Thank you. I have too many apps. I can't even keep up with them. There's an app for literally everything now. And some places won't even let you do anything with their services unless you download an app.
The two apps that I would be like devastated if they disappeared would be the TV Time app and the Just Watch app.
I do love Just Watch.
Those two apps are my life.
I think I actually have them downloaded from years ago when you told me to do this. Anywho.
One thing I will also add is cable TV and network TV, they have the advantage that I can have check your brain at the door television a lot more often than streaming. I don't have to watch all 8 episodes to get a story done. That's the one thing that is kind of driving. There's not enough encapsulated television where every episode is just kind of its own thing. There's not enough of that in streaming.
Here's the problem though. I can't get turn your brain off at thing television without paying $101 to get it, because I can't just get my local channels unless I buy an antenna and put it on my roof.
Well, thankfully, all those shows are on streaming networks as well. So you can find them there.
That's why I get them there.
You can get them there. I watch High Potential religiously every week, and it's on Hulu. So,
except for Fox. Fox is still the enigma. There's no Fox shows.
Fox shows are on Hulu.
Sometimes, not all of them.
I think almost all of them.
FX shows are on there.
No, Fox shows are on there, man. Just watch Patrick Dempsey the other day. Fox shows are on there. They are.
I'll have to take a look.
You should. Disney owns Fox.
Maybe I don't watch a lot of Fox shows anymore because I just don't pay attention to
broadcasts. It's very possible. I mean, there's a lot of game shows. I don't know if those are on there. I have no idea, but because I don't watch them. Anyway.
I can't get Fox football.
Our show is independently funded. Therefore, all of the expenses are from our own pockets. Streamers don't help us, except Troy. He gets, apparently, his own check from Apple. And Patreon helps fans support favorite podcasts. Once you sign up, you get immediate access to all the content in your respective tier. Patreon.com/TheHollywoodOutsider. Hey, now it's time for a spoiler-free review. If you haven't seen this one advertised very much, you're not alone. It's a very independent movie called Cold Storage, starring everybody's favorite babysitter, Steve Harrington. That's right, as Joe Keery and Georgina Campbell star as two security guards and a storage facility who stumble across, well, a very, very large bioterrorism threat. And also you have Liam Neeson here, who is a former government operative, who learns that there's been a leak in the storage. See, what happens was there was a fungus from space that landed, you know, 18 years before the events of this movie, and they were put into a government facility. And of course, because, you know, I'm assuming Doge cuts or whatever, the facility got shuttered and was bought by a storage facility. And of course, they thought that they secured whatever was left in there. Well, not completely, because present day, now we've got a leak. And what this stuff does is very reminiscent of kind of, I don't know, Slither and other movies of that sort. But if you touch this substance, it infects you and causes you to basically mutate and explode in the goriest of ways. And it also gets in your brain and tries to make you do certain things that you might not have done otherwise. So Joe Keery and Georgina Campbell, they play two security guards in this storage facility. There's T-Cake and Naomi. And yes, he goes by T-Cake in the movie. He has a real name. His name is Travis, but yeah, you got to watch it, right? And Liam Neeson is the government agent who knows about this, and apparently he's the only one really concerned about a actual outbreak, so he's on his way to try and thwart it. So what is happening throughout this movie is you have the two security guards trying to deal with the actual ever-present threat, and then you have Liam Neeson coming in as this government agent to try and actually deal with it and contain it before it explodes and takes the world down because the rest of the government doesn't believe him. Because he's old now, he's got back problems. It's probably the first Liam Neeson movie I've seen where he acted his age. because throughout the movie, he's like, ah, ooh, my back, instead of killing 45 other assassins, you know, single-handedly. He's actually acting his age here, like a pretty washed-up government agent. And I got to say, this is like a starring vehicle for Joe Keery, but also for Georgina Campbell. I think she was in Barbarian, if you didn't see that. I think both do an admirable job. I have to say, I keep using Slither as an example because it's very much like that. It's that over-the-top, grotesque gore that was part of Slither, but also the humor. There's a lot of humor. It's not quite as outlandish, but there's definitely a lot of humor, a lot of fun. There's one guy in an Edgar suit from Men in Black, like a little homage. I don't know if it's intentional, but it sure felt that way. And it's written by David Koepp, who you might know adapted Jurassic Park and a lot of other Steven Spielberg works. So, man, there's a good pedigree. It's directed by Johnny Campbell, no relation. So it's fun. That's number one, okay? This is a small independent movie. It's getting a theatrical release. It'll probably be streaming in no time, which is too bad because these are the kind of movies I want to support. I want to go and have a great time. Comes out the same weekend as Good Luck, Have Fun, Don't Die. Go see both of them. That's my recommendation. One is they're going to make you think and everything else. This is a very tightly paced movie that you're just going to have a good time with, you know, with your friends, and a lot of cool deaths and a lot of cool asides. And I like the chemistry between Joe Keery and Georgina Campbell. They kind of really come together as the movie goes on. Really appreciate that. And I really just dug it. And I know, you know, it's not because I love Joe Keery. I don't really think he gets a ton to do here. He's not up in the wattage like Steve Harrington. He doesn't have Dustin to bounce off of. But I think he's doing an admirable job of kind of positioning himself to be a leading man. And, you know, in terms of the rest of the story, and the rest of the characters you interact with, a lot of who you're running into are characters that are very one-note. They're very one-dimensional. You're just waiting for their cool death, right? I'm just being perfectly honest. That's the kind of movie this is. There's character development for Travis and Naomi and even Robert Quinn, who's Liam Neeson's character, a little bit. But really, it's about the cool deaths, right? It's about the fantastic fun with watching somebody explode and figuring out when they're going to pop. You know, mama had a baby and its head popped off. Yeah, it's a lot of those. And trying to make sure that this contagion doesn't get out. But overall, I'm just saying this was a fun time at the theater. There was actually a pretty decent crowd I went to a early showing, but it was a pretty decent crowd. I definitely recommend it, man. I mean, yeah, you could go see Wuthering Heights and get sad and mopey and watch Jacob Elordi seethe at the screen. Just sit there and go, oh, my darling, I love you. You're the one. And Margot Robbie just looking all Margot Robbie-esque. Sure, you could do that. Or, hear me out, you have fun. I'm sure you're probably going to be taking a date, right? And she's going to be like, I want to see Wuthering Heights. And you say, well, would you rather be sad and mopey or have a good time? And if you want to have a good time, I think you want to go see Cold Storage. That's my advice. So if $10 is the full price of admission, I give Cold Storage $7. It is not rewriting the book. It is not going to win best anything, but it's a great time at the movies, and that's what I want sometimes. Okay? And if you don't want to see that one, go see Good Luck, Have Fun, Don't Die. You're going to win with that one too. What I don't recommend is Wuthering Heights, and I haven't even seen it because I don't care. Just being honest. Stop trying to make Elordi happen. Instead, make Joe Keery happen. Ah. Any recent film or TV recommendations we haven't talked about many that you guys want to mention?
Well, I'm going to go around Bridgerton season 4 part 1. First of all, hate that we're splitting up seasons as like a normal thing now. Thanks for that, Netflix. You are a problem. This was not part of my enjoyed it algorithm, so please change that moving forward. I would say that this season is a little bit better than the last one so far, but I also feel like some components of the story are dragging and feels a little bit repetitive. However, it is fun getting introduced with new houses and visiting, if you will, with different families in the show. However, I also am curious, and Troy, I'm pretty sure you've watched Bridgerton. I feel like they're bringing in, from an inclusive standpoint, more like very diverse families that were not around in the first season. And it's like, where did they come from? Did we do this just because we want to have more inclusivity? Or was this not part of the forethought
algorithms
all along?
Man, that's my opinion.
It's weird.
Sorry. Troy, she was talking to you, not me.
Yeah, I am not a Bridgerton watcher.
Oh, disappointing. I thought you were.
No, because it's on Netflix. And Netflix is like my least watched go-to service.
That's the best one.
She's got so many weird
I watched The Diplomat instead, which I think is much more up my alley.
Fair enough. Did you have anything you want to recommend, Troy?
I don't think I've got anything new that I've been watching since the last time we chatted. But I am going to go see, you know, Good Luck, Have Fun, Don't Die.
You and should.
And probably send Help as a double feature.
That'd be a great day. Great day.
I already got my Scream 7 tickets booked.
Ooh. Did you see there's a lawsuit now about the Scream mask? Somebody's trying to say that they had the rights to it. I'm like, it's been 30 years, jackasses. Like, what a...
What? Yeah,
look into it. I'm not going to get into it here. Even though we're a moving TV podcast, it's too
long. I was going to say, this would have been a really good topic for us to introduce news
would
with.
Would it? Would it, though?
Yeah.
No.
How stupid. I got to look this up now.
There's a lawsuit against a special effects studio who created the mask. They said that they didn't have the rights to get the mask. I think it's El Terranian Ghost Factory or something like that. I don't know. But they're trying. There's a bunch of lawsuits going on and whatever. The movie's going to come out, but it's just so weird.
Everybody's getting sued.
It's been
anymore.
30 years.
It is
though.
What it is.
It's like the people that like they're patent company buyers and they buy up a patent, then they come sue your ass because no one else was following up on the patent.
I don't know.
Or the little baby from the Nirvana album who's like, I didn't approve this, and it's like, go talk to your parents, kid.
Right.
It's been 30 years.
Well, I will tell you a recommendation I have is A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms. I was a little hesitant on this one. Just because House of the Dragon season 2, I mean, made me almost say, nah, I'm done with this entire series. I just thought they dragged that whole second season on. But man, it's so good. They're half hour episodes, are really short. It's about Sir Dunk the Tall, and he comes to take care.
Duncan the Tall.
They call him Dunk. Duncan Egg. That's the book. So, but yes, Duncan the Tall. But he wants to be a knight, so he's going to a tournament and he's trying to basically win his knighthood, prove his mettle, if you will, and prove his former father figure was warranted in his knighthood. And he comes across a young boy named Egg, who's like 11 years old, and he wants to become a squire, and there's a lot more to it there. But it is a beautifully told story. It's more of a comedic tone, but not completely. There's definitely a lot of Game of Thronesies going on here. There's a lot of Game of Thrones action and storylines, some political intrigue here and there. But it's really more of a relaxed story just about these two characters and their journey together. And I freaking am coming to love it. I didn't love it at the beginning. I'm starting to love it now. So,
well, I'm glad you're coming around.
I am coming around. Absolutely.
Yeah. Kyle and I were big on it 2 weeks ago.
Yep. You were. But I finally caught up and I'm like, okay, I'm in. Stamp of approval.
I haven't watched it yet, but I did after months and months and months. Do a rewatch of Game of Thrones and then started watching some of the House of Dragon episodes to prep for this show for the Seven Kingdoms. And I was worried it wouldn't be that all that good because I haven't heard too many people talking about it. So it's good to know that we have at least two hoes with a stamp of approval.
I'm just glad I don't have to know any Game of Thrones to enjoy it. That's the best part.
Oh, really? I thought you would have to. I mean, it helps
to know, like, the houses, like, who's, like, Winterfell, okay. You know, Targaryen, Lannister, you know, all that stuff.
But because it's so long ago, it's not as prevalent to the original show.
It's more like Easter eggs, you know?
Yeah.
Okay.
But, Amanda, since you just rewatched Game of Thrones, do you feel any different about the ending, or does it still stick? I've rewatched it 3 times, and I still like the ending. I don't love it, but I like it.
I like the ending. I'm still okay with how it ended. Aside from obviously, I wanted more. I didn't like the fact that Cersei got to feel a little bit of love at the end.
Yeah, that's bullshit.
Hated that. I really wish that she could have gotten, like, limb by limb eaten by a dragon and then scorched. Okay. I really wanted just more pain there. And other than that, you know, I think we talked when it originally happened, it was still a little bit rushed. I still felt the same. I felt like there could have been more in the last season, and particularly the last few episodes. Yep. give you a little bit more content there to make it pacing feel consistent throughout the show and feel like you're getting everything that was due in that time. But yeah, I still liked it. I still liked it. I wasn't mad.
I ain't mad at it.
I ain't mad at it.
Troy, nice job putting your numbers together.
You're welcome.
Good job, Mr. Data Man.
All right, guys. That's going to do it for this episode. We are out. So remember, the next time you head to a theater or stream comfortably on your couch with all your streaming channels, buy popcorn.
I think I'm buying enough things right now, Aaron, because apparently I'm the only one not using credit card points to pay for all my subscriptions.
He's using points to pay for subscriptions. That's amazing.
Honestly, brilliant. Good for you.
I'm not giving him that compliment. No.